nation that actually has gone through change and showed resilience. And we will keep the questions until the end, where we will discuss the whole concept of organizational resilience and change. And the next presenter is Diane Nyers. Please, Diane.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank the Mary Amelia Douglas Whited Center for inviting me to participate in this program as well. I am Diana Myers. I'm a registered nurse, and since Katrina, I've worked as the community wellness director, parish nurse, and disaster coordinator for St. Anna's Episcopal Church, and I have no financial relationships regarding this presentation. The learning objectives for this particular presentation is to identify key partnerships for organizational growth, discuss the role of local culture in establishing a program direction, and discuss the relationships between an institution's community identity and the ability to foster change. A little bit about who we are at St. Anna's Church. We were established in 1846, and we have always been a working class church, never one with lots of money. We're a very welcoming church to anyone who walks through our doors, and because of that, we're a very diverse community, which goes along with our neighborhood and the neighborhoods that surround us as well. We're located in the Treme area of New Orleans, which is just about three blocks outside of the French Quarter, very close to the lower Ninth Ward, the upper Ninth Ward, Central City, Mid-City, and the Seventh Ward. All of these areas have a very high poverty rate. 38.74% in 2000 was recorded. And the median income for this area was just a little bit over $20,000 in the same year. Before Hurricane Katrina, we had had about 10 years of some turmoil in our congregation. We had dropped down to about 25 members from about a high of 150 to 200. During the 2 years prior to Katrina, we had managed to increase our congregation to about 70 members, which was going pretty well. Prior to Katrina, our outreach focuses were mainly to the youth of the neighborhood. African-American boys were encouraged to come and participate as altar servers, and we had basketball games, and we took them on mission trips to build homes around the country over the summer. And during the summer, we had vacation Bible school for some of the younger children that were in the neighborhood. The church during Katrina had no flooding whatsoever, and we had very little damage comparatively. We had some windows damaged, some rainwater that came in, but other than that, it was very mild, which helped us to get going and start helping people very quickly after the storm. The first projects that we did were pretty much based on what we thought was needed, and that was literally a task in itself. We had many, many churches from all around the United States calling us and wanting to know what they can do to help. They did not want to participate through big organizations and large funding companies. They wanted a personal experience. So through these churches, they sent us things like personal care kits, small appliances, gift cards, blankets, things like that that the people that were left in New Orleans or returning to New Orleans could use right away. We started talking a little bit to these different churches all across the United States, and healthcare naturally was the topic of conversation. As you probably have heard, we were down to 2 out of 8 hospitals right after Katrina, one of those being a children's hospital. Most of the medical office buildings were completely destroyed, along with them the medical records of most of our clients in the city. We had long waits in emergency rooms. We had little nurses and little doctors coming back into town. During this time frame, in early 2006, a survey of the area realized that we had 34% of our residents in the Orleans Parish area had no normal means of health care other than an emergency room. So you can imagine the 10 and 12 and 14-hour waits just for a minor problem. So we started talking about how we could help. Flexibility, as was discussed a few minutes ago, was the key. We started thinking about a mobile health unit and how this could possibly work. There was no public transportation at this time, so people who did not have their own transportation had very little means of getting around. The healthcare facilities, as we already said, were gone. We had a lot of first-time uninsured people. I remember one particular lady who, once we started going out, literally looked us in the eyes and said, "I've had insurance and a job all of my life. I don't know what to do now." And this was the common thread throughout the city. The people that were returning had tons of work to do with their houses and rebuilding their lives. Healthcare was put last on their list. The out-of-town churches that we talked about too before were invited to come down to visit us in December of 2005. The city was still in shambles. We wanted them to see firsthand what was going on and what they could help us think about for the future. These people were going to be our key to trying to figure out what we can manage in trying to help New Orleans get out of this situation. They agreed to the mobile medical unit with the stipulation that we would need their support financially and any other way they can give it. The church could not do it by themselves. They took the bull by the horns at that point. They managed within 2 weeks to give us enough money to buy a used mobile medical unit, or actually it's a used RV that we converted to a mobile medical unit. We started working on our purpose and our policies, trying to get things together. The goal here was to focus on a couple of things. What we felt that the charity system of New Orleans lacked prior to Katrina, and what our religious faith demanded of us, and that was to respect and to have dignity for every client that we saw. It was a small-scale operation. As I said, we only had 70 members in our church. By the time Katrina came, we were down to 25 again, with most people leaving town, not coming back. We had two employees. It was myself. I became the first full-time employee, and a little bit later, we hired a part-time driver. We utilized volunteer nurses, doctors, nurse practitioners, and lay people to help us register patients as they came to us. We contacted and networked around the city to try and get with people and organizations to help us in ways that we could not do ourselves or without the assistance of other people. Mary Amelia Center was one of them, Tulane Medical Center, several of the different organizations in the area. Prior to actually receiving our medical unit, we started working outside of our church on card tables, stopping people as they pass by, doing blood pressure checks and diabetes checks, and just talking to them. Tulane Medical Center School of Psychiatry was assisting with us, and they were able to do depression and PTSD screenings and some small counseling sessions with them as well. 2006, our mobile unit arrived. We refurbished it a little bit, we added our supplies to it, and we were able to get out and into the streets. First outing we had was a health fair. This was both a disaster and a benefit all in one time. Many things happened at that point. We were not supposed to go where we were, not supposed to set up where we were told to set up. Many other doctors or volunteers had offered to come and help. We're also told they couldn't go where they were supposed to, so they all converged on our unit. It's a two-room RV. Even with my history of doing health fairs, for some reason, I guess I thought there was nobody in New Orleans, so I didn't have a whole lot of people volunteering. We saw probably 100 to 150 people that day to do blood pressure screenings and diabetes screenings. It managed to work out well. We sent three people to the hospital that day that were in dire need of attention, and we were able to give a lot more people contacts for new clinics that had started up. After that, we set up weekly, regular rotating schedules where we go to sites once a week. Consistency is extremely important to build the trust of the people in New Orleans, especially after Katrina, when the normal mechanism of communication is, "Oh no, we don't do that here, you have to go over there." And then when you do that, it's the same thing over and over again. So we wanted to provide as much as we can at the place that we were on a consistent basis, and it does work. People continue to come back. Most of the populations that we work with are the homeless, the uninsured, and Hispanic migrant workers, which had increased greatly since Hurricane Katrina. Since April of 2006, we've seen over 7,800 people on our unit. 60% of those are between 35 and 60 years old. and a majority of those are uninsured. 9% of the people we see have new or uncontrolled diabetes. 27% have new or uncontrolled hypertension. These are people in great distress. Over 400 people have been seen with some form of depression. Mental health, as we've heard, has been a huge problem in the city. And it's very common, especially after disasters. It's coming in waves, and we're seeing it diminish a little bit, and then a little while later, a whole new set of people are showing up with some problems with depression. The stigma of being crazy or being labeled as crazy has been the greatest problem that we've had with treating people with depression, and that has been our focus with some new grants that we've received, is to try to make this more comfortable for people. The majority of people that have depression has been known to go to primary care physicians and not to mental health professionals. So since we provide some primary care activities and we're in the neighborhoods, this was a logical jump for us. We provide culturally acceptable activities such as community drum circles, victims of violence support groups, and we're getting ready to start a Talk It Out van where we'll go into the communities with this van just to chat. We provide safe places to seek medical care. We have care managers that we've just hired to help educate and keep up with patients and encourage them to continue their care. And we encourage community to in a video voice project so that they can identify for themselves some resilience processes. As I said before, we had to network and really communicate with a lot of our partners. This is a list of many of them that we have communicated with. We cannot do without any of them. They provide us such wonderful resources and such wonderful assistance in what we do so that we can provide extra work and extra care to our clients. Second thing we did after Hurricane Katrina was we started a musicians ministry. This was started in April of 2006, and it was because of the local musicians that were lacking jobs in the city. And we also had some people that were missing the music, so we began this ministry. It's a weekly concert where we pay a band to play. We provide a supper for donations only, and we make sure that the musicians have a meal to eat. We also provide free resources during this time as well. The medical care provided by our medical mission, mental health counseling, massage therapy, acupuncture, legal counseling, and housing assistance, all in two tiny rooms of the church. We've paid over 500 musicians. We've served over 8,000 meals. Almost 1,000 people have received medical screenings. 1,000 people have received acupuncture. And we've done 52 HIV testing and counseling during this time. Then we jumped in a little bit different category. We went to the Latino Apostolate. This actually started because a young lady was volunteering English classes for these migrant workers that were coming in, and she needed a place to do the work. She started out with 6 to 10 people in her classes. We offered her a place in our church to do this on the evenings, and she now has 12 to 25 per class, 5 nights a week. Social issues, naturally, it was a common occurrence, and then we tried to help out as much as we can. So from this, we grew from just ESL classes to the Latino Apostolate. We've hired a priest to do pastoral counseling and to do Spanish language masses. We've expanded the program to another church in the city, and they also help us with assisting on the medical unit with translations. The most popular thing that we've done, although it's popular by media, is our Murder Board and Rose Ministry. This picture shows a board that's posted on the front of our church, and it lists every single person that has been murdered, and this particular board is 2007. As the people are murdered, we put their name, their age, and how they were murdered up on the board. This was to recognize that the high murder rate in the city, but also because the fact that we felt like the people that were being murdered were not recognized as human beings, just as numbers, and since most of them were African American and or had a long rap sheet, their deaths were almost being negated. We also bring a rose for each victim every week to the mayor's office, and we have just recently expanded that to the chief of police as well as the city council. We read the names of the victims every week at our masses out loud, along with how they were murdered. And on All Souls Day, which is coming up, we'll be reading a year's worth of names. This is over 250 names. From all of these programs, we have another program that's actually going to happen on Saturday. And this is called the Horns for Guns. It's a combination of a medical mission, ministry to musicians, and the murder board as well. We have two people with two totally different ideas that came together, and with the help of our priests, we put them all together, aimed at getting kids off of the streets and giving alternatives to violence and guns. The gun buyback program, Horns for Guns, exchanges the gun for a musical instrument, a camera, or art supplies, and it also puts children into a program where they would learn to use these supplies, as well as have some mechanisms to reach healthcare workers, mental health counselors, and try to help reduce the stress in their lives as well from what they see outside. The programs are independently run from the church, but they have allowed us to bring in the counselors that we want to have attend to the children. All of the people on Saturday that show up will be required to have physical and mental health screenings, and we'll have licensed counselors available for them if they need to. So in summary, the key partnerships have stimulated our growth. Networking is an important process. The use of local culture gains the interest of our clients. The example of the therapeutic drum circle, drumming is very important, and music is very important in the city of New Orleans, so it attracts people to mental health therapy, even though it's not named mental health therapy. And a trusting, caring relationship with the community increases the ability to foster change in the community that we serve. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Diane. Yet another